faculty members to use to tape class.
Yeah. It's very cool. I'll tell you, I taught a summer class to teachers up at Exeter this summer about using, I taught teachers. It was actually fun. They were really awesome. They liked me. I felt so popular. It was so great. But the other thing that was really interesting was I taught about using all sorts of different technologies.
Yo, except, what did they call you?
Oh, they called me by my first name. No, they didn't. I had a nun in the class. She was great. She was like 75, 80 years old. Oh, she was so cool. But I didn't cross her, you know. I just had Jesus. But you know what was really neat? And all the things I did, I taught them how to use PowerPoints, how to use Excel. We talked about making blogs and a wiki. We made our own class wiki. And the thing they most liked was taping class, the audio tape, the audio recording. MP3s, that's how I save them, so you can listen to them. You don't have to save them.
All the time.
Little extras. These are things that are not in your book. They're things that we're going to talk about, though, because they are important concepts. And I'm going to talk about a different kind of simulation. Tiger Woods, who just won $10 million, contributed to his retirement fund. And when he can, I believe he can tap into it in 19 years. And they said at that point it might actually be worth, I believe they said $29
million.
Must be nice. Yeah, must be nice. I know. Anyway, let's look at this situation. What if Wheaties? You guys know Wheaties?
Yeah.
Cereal, Breakfast of Champions?
Yeah.
Okay. Wheaties used to put people on the cover of their boxes. What if Wheaties instead put little trading card pictures in their cereal box? Now imagine if Tiger Woods was only in 20% of the boxes. Tiger's pretty popular now. Lance Armstrong in 30%. And Serena Williams in 50%. Now, I don't know why they made these profiles. I got this out of this book.
Yeah.
She just lost, actually.
She doesn't watch women's tennis.
I don't watch women's tennis.
Okay. Well, I don't watch women's tennis either, but I am vaguely aware of the world around me. Okay. How could we run a simulation using cards to predict how many boxes we would likely... I'm talking. You should be quiet. How would we run a simulation to... predict how many boxes we would likely need to buy to end up with a complete set. Would one simulation be enough?
No. You mean buy one, maybe?
Like if we ran, well, okay, were you guys here? You guys were here for the cards? You were here the first day of the cards. Okay, that was a simulation. Did we run one simulation?
No.
No. Each group did 10, and honestly, we saw that we got a lot of variability, probably more than that. So, let's talk about how you would possibly do a simulation using some specific language. Whenever you're going to do a simulation, the first thing you should do is identify the component. The component is the basic event to be repeated. So if we were going to do a cereal box draw using cards, what would be the basic component that we would be repeating over and over and over again? Let me go back and describe this again.
Drawing the cards.
Well, but the component is really what are you simulating? Drawing what? A box of cereal.
Right.
Okay. The basic component, the thing you're going to repeat over and over again, is simulating getting a box of cereal. That's called the component. Okay. Because we're going to run a simulation to predict how many boxes we would likely need to buy. The component. You're right. I understand what you're saying. Drawing the card is component, but the thing is the basic event is really...
What does drawing the card represent?
What drawing the card in this case represents. What each thing you're doing represents in your trial. Identify how you would model the outcomes. Now let's think about this. A deck of cards. 20% are Tiger. 30% of the boxes have Lance. And 50% have Serena Williams. Imagine, you've got a deck of cards. How could you simulate that?
What are different players from? You got a total of 10 cards.
Okay, total 10 cards. How about ace through nine?
Okay.
Is that good?
Right.
Okay. So we'll use ace through nine.
Or you could just do it by
suit.
Two cards, tigers, spades, lances, clubs, Jonas hearts, and do two of the tiger, usually hearts, and five of the Serena.
Well, but remember, you've got to have a way to simulate 10 total, so 2 out of the 10
six. You have two spades, three.
So two spades.
Three hearts.
Three hearts.
Five diamonds.
Diamonds.
And five diamonds. But you gotta make up a whole bunch of them. Because, you know, in one run, you're only, if we're selecting, I think, let's look back at what it said. Oh, predicting how many boxes we would likely need to buy. I mean, theoretically, you know, you may have to go through, I think I'd feel better, though, if I had more than just those cards.
Well, you could
take
more
like
that six.
And then keep going through. Well, but that's a replacement. You can't replace it because the box of cereal, once it's selected, you don't put it back in and select
the
same box.
But you still have the same chance.
Yeah, but each card should represent a different box of cereal.
Why don't you just use numbers?
The other way, you could do it this way, or you could do it by numbers. If you do the ace and the one, or the ace and the two, excuse me, they'll represent tiger. The three, the four, the five represent Lance. And then six through nine represent Serena. The way you do that way, you have 10 cards all in a row, and they fit the percentages. All you have to do is pull out the face cards.
Isn't that only nine?
Six through ten,
yeah.
Six through ten.
Oh, six through ten. Wait. Ace, two, three, four, five, six, seven, eight, nine, ten. Sorry, yep, six through ten.
My bad, okay.
Six, seven, eight, nine, ten. Yeah. That way you've got 10 cards and the percentages are perfect. This one you're gonna have to kind of separate things out a little bit and make sets of 10. Whereas if you take all the face cards out and assign it this way, 20% of your cards are Tiger Woods, 30% of your cards are Lance Armstrong, and 50% of your cards are Serena.
And then
okay?
Just take out
the Jeff.
Take out the face cards. Take out the face cards.
And then that would be four simulations. I mean.
Okay, well, this is how you model the outcomes. The outcomes are your assignment of your cards. Then explain how you will simulate a trial that says, okay, I will deal out the cards. In our distracted driving, explaining how we model the outcomes would say, okay, the zero, what did we say, what were the numbers we used in that one? I can't even remember what we did.
We
only did the face cards?
What are we talking about?
We took out the face cards.
And certain numbers represented one thing happening. That was it. The hearts represented, the hearts represented the people who were distracted. So that's how you would model the outcome. The deck of cards, the face cards are removed, the hearts model the distracted drivers, the other cards model the non-distracted drivers. Now explain how you simulate the trial says, okay, this is what I'm going to do. Here we would say, I'm going to lay out cards till I get one of each, okay? I'm going to take my cards, and I'm just going to lay them out until I get one of each. Then my trial is over, because the trial is based on how many cards you need to get the five. Stating clearly the response variable. The response variable is that thing that is success or failure. In this case, we want success getting three boxes of cereal. And once you do that, the rest of it's pretty easy. You run a bunch of trials. You analyze what you got. And like you can take an average, like we did, we took an average of a proportion. And then you state your conclusion in the context of the problem. Please realize, a simulation does not tell you what is going to happen. A simulation tells you what appears to be possible that would happen based on the simulation. A simulation is not really what happens, but what appears that will happen based on this particular simulation. And a different simulation could come out a different way. Okay, so the blue is important vocabulary, the component, the outcome, the trial, and the response variable. When you were looking at, when you read the article on the lurking variables, that was talking about the effect on the response variable as opposed to the effect on the, the treatment that you apply. Okay? It's very basic, but again, this is some of the questions you'll be asked will be a little specific about this. Okay, and again, how many trials? I mean, that is a personal choice, but I think a lot of times you really want to get 5, 10, 15 trials. The more trials, the better.
Some more talking about some bias and on sampling. There are a couple different kinds of bias. The first kind is, and again, this isn't talked about real well in our book, a bias sample over or under emphasizes some characteristics of a population. So bias is anything that's, you know, or a bias sample is something that isn't truly representative, and there are different kinds of bias. There's actually a lot of different kinds of bias. If you go onto Wikipedia and read all those entries, there's tons of them. We're only going to talk about a couple. A systematic bias is a bias as a result of the system that is, like if a scale is miscalibrated, if a thermometer is off by a certain amount. And systematic bias can be dealt with pretty easily. If you know the scale is over by 3 pounds every time you weigh yourself, you just take away 3. Systematic bias. As opposed to a response bias. Anything in the way the data was collected that influences the response. Now, this is really very much anything. There's also something called cognitive bias, but cognitive bias gets pulled into this one. And response bias could be the way a question is worded, which is the way it's presented, the order in which the choices are presented, which I found very interesting. If people poll, supposedly certain pollers will change the order of always, sometimes, never, to really avoid that, you know, kind of, I'm going to go down, just keep circling the same thing over and over. The question content, the question setting, or the appearance of the questioner. This, and what I'm trying to get at, is it goes both ways. We throw out a question. Doesn't it seem that seniors deserve open campus from the first day of school? That still is response bias because that's how I'm stating it, but how I'm stating it affects the response. The question content, if a teacher says, I'd like you to fill out this questionnaire, have you ever cheated in my class? Some people may not feel comfortable being honest at the end of the year, even though it's all over, if she's going to try to read your handwriting. She, he, them. Question setting, or this was a good one that someone posed. If someone walks up to a couple on the street, a married couple, and says, okay, if you had to do it all over again, would you still do it? I don't know. I think I'd answer yes regardless. I think a lot, you know, that could affect the response. Or the appearance of a questioner, and this was what someone wrote. They said, what if a priest asks a question? You know, or someone in authority.
You ever sinned?
Someone in
psych
did that.
What?
Someone in psych did that. I think it was like Pat and Luke. Like one dressed up as like a hobo and one dressed up nicely. And they were at the train station and they like asked people to borrow money for something, like buying a newspaper or something like that. And they saw the difference of people that responded and people that didn't.
That is absolutely, that's response bias.
Yeah,
Luke
just
said
that.
Luke
Besher.
Besher?
Yeah.
The dancing boy that dressed up.
Yeah.
Oh, and Lewis, I have to tell you that was outstanding. And as a parent of a middle schooler, I was sad that the middle schoolers weren't in for that video. That video was very good. It was very tasteful. I liked it. And it was on YouTube that night, so I could show it to my kids.
Yeah, that was great.
And so they walked to their house, of course, singing. And then we realized all the other words that you could sing, like arugula, arugula. Arugula. And so we walked through the supermarket singing arugula.
I just think Kim and I did a study kind of like that, except we tested how, like, boys and girls asking certain questions change their response to freshmen.
Absolutely.
And it was, like, really different.
Was it really?
Yeah.
Now, if girls ask boys, did it change?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Like they were all, like certain questions. Like we made the questions specifically ones that we thought might have a change, but
But that's the whole point is you're supposed to come up with a hypothesis and start with it and see where it goes. That's the point of doing all these experiments.
Yeah.
And you saw all the
difference.
What question did you ask?
We asked some questions like, if you could pick, would you rather date someone older, younger, or your age?
Oh,
something like that. So, like,
and the freshman boys were like, I'd like someone older.
Well, no, like the freshman boys, like two boys said that they would date someone older, but like two girls, they were like, oh, like my age. Like, because they were probably awkward saying to us.
Yeah. Oh, that's great. That's perfect. I mean, that's actually, I think that's the more fun thing about doing a survey is honestly make one up that's going to have bias as opposed to getting rid of the bias makes it very dry. Now, that's what you have to do. That's what pollers have to do. Oh, I got polled this weekend. Someone, I got one of those calls and it was asking me about radio stations I listened to. And I was like, you know what? I'm going to answer your question because I
answered them.
Normally, I would hang up like this.
Normally, I'd be like, do I ever call me again? But I am.
Find you.
Okay. Now, you guys, you historians among you, because I didn't know about this, the Al Landon versus FDR election of 1936.
and the survey done by Literary Digest, which incorrectly predicted that Landon would win by a landslide. Anyone know about this?
Yeah, but I thought that it was a different president.
No.
They said someone else.
No, wait. FDR? No, Alf Landon and FDR.
I guess it happened, and they like predicted that he was going to win, but it was like a bias. Or they only asked, what was it like? He was a Democrat, they asked
him. No, you know what? You're on the right idea. Okay, so it was Literary Digest, and Literary Digest had some success in predicting, making predictions. So they sent out, and the number was 10 million ballots, and the magazine got back 2.4 million responses, which is considered, I think, very high, because at that time, people still took, they weren't cynical. They took things very seriously and felt, well, if someone has gone to the trouble of sending me this ballot, I'm going to send it back. The problem was, the people what they did was the first thing they used was a telephone book. And in 1936, did everybody have a telephone?
No, only the upper class.
Yeah, only the upper class had a telephone. The other lists available to the digest were driver's registrations. How many people in the 30s you think were drivers? Certainly not poor. Certainly not the people with low income. That's a luxury. What?
You think they would have thought about this.
But you know what? If it doesn't happen before, I think it didn't occur to them. The other thing was, now this one must have occurred to them, memberships in country clubs. I'm sorry. That to me is like a no-brainer device. But also on top of it, they didn't realize that what they didn't realize was the groundswell of support for Roosevelt by people without money. The main campaign issue in 1936 was the economy. Roosevelt's core supporters tended to be less well-off, were not represented, and the error was they predicted a 57-43 win of Alf Landon, by Alf Landon, and you know 57-43 is considered a landslide. That's a big difference. Roosevelt won 62-37. So it was way off. It was way off. Literary Digest went under within a couple of... months to years afterwards, they went completely under, and they think that maybe this might have been the beginning of the end for them. So you know, that's an, and that's like an innocent bias. You know, sometimes you don't. And JP, I think your point is great. Shouldn't they have thought of it? Sometimes you don't think of those biases till you look at the results and then extrapolate and see you're incorrect. Then it involves going back and saying, all right, what mistakes did I make? Couple of more vocabulary words that are going to be coming up. There are, when we look at the data, you guys know we talk about mean and median, mode, average, standard deviation. I hope you've heard these words at some point in your life. There are two ways of looking at data. You could look at an entire population, which is everybody, and then anything you come up, a number that represents like the average age, the average income. That's called a parameter. And parameters are denoted by Greek letters. Mu, sigma, rho. Rho is like a curly kind of P. You guys know Greek letters, right?
Physics.
Yeah, mu, sigma. Yeah, you'll know them. Yeah. Okay. As opposed to if you look at just a sample. A sample... If you're looking at a number that represents something about the about a smaller group of people that you want to extrapolate or extrapolate to a whole population, that's actually called a statistic. So if I were to take the average of our first test, we would call that a parameter because that represents our whole class. But if I took a survey of you guys and extrapolated it to seniors, that survey I said, hey, the average amount of homework a first semester senior is doing is... per night is 2.3 hours per night, 7 nights a week. That would be called a statistic because it only represents... All right. And statistics are denoted by Latin letters. X with a bar on it, we call it X bar. Sometimes some books will use Y bars, so there is some lack of consistency between different textbooks out there.
Sorry.
That's what our second
chapter is going to be about is looking at third chapter is about looking at statistics, and we spend the rest of the year looking at population parameters as opposed to sample statistics. And if you make a mistake with the words, I'm not going to be all over your case, but just when you're doing some reading, you need to know. When they talk about a parameter as opposed to talking about a statistic, they are two different things. Okay. The sampling frame, that's another vocabulary word, the list of individuals from which the sample is drawn. So if I were to use my classes to take a survey of the seniors, my sampling frame would be the seniors in my third, fourth, and fifth period class. That would be the sampling frame. Sampling variability is the term that refers to the fact that samples drawn at random should differ from one another. If they don't, there may be a problem with how you're drawing your samples. They're not truly random. If you draw a random sample of seniors, five names out of a hat, and then another group, five names out of the hat, and look at some statistic with that group, the difference from sample to sample is the sampling variability. Make sense? Multi-stage sampling is if you sample in a bunch of different ways. Let's say you do, you stratify, then you take a random group out of that. That's called multi-stage sampling. Again, these are all available online, so if you feel like you missed something, you can always look at it. And some of this will be pretty basic. Different aspects of this course will feel very basic, very easy to different of you, so you won't even need to see it. I don't know if I have another slide here. Oh, this was, I found this very interesting, and I want to do a little bit more research on it. Believe it or not, depending on the size of your... regardless of the size of your sample, a random sample of 100 can represent a sample of 1 million people as well as a sample of 1,000 people equally well, as long as a sample is truly random, which I found really interesting. When they do Gallup polls, do you know how many they usually survey? Gallup, you know, when they call people and ask about who you're going to vote for, things like that. Do you ever see surveys where they say plus or minus 2% or 3%. I believe what they typically do is 1,000 people. 1,000. This says 100 people. I've read other places that 1,000 people is enough to make a very strong inference about a population at large. And I believe that's what Gallup polls do. I believe they survey 1,000 people.
Wait, I have a question. Do they like wait until they get 1,000 people that answer, or like if someone?
Well, Gallup polls, I believe, are phone polls, so they're just going to go through and make
Like they'll make 1,000 calls, and then if like they talk, then they'll count. But like
if they don't talk, they don't count. Yeah. The thousand responses. That's a good thing. You need 1,000 responses.
Don't people that tend a bunch of hang out kids? Don't they need different philosophies? Couldn't people that hang out different personalities?
You could. Well, that's the problem with those polls. And I mean, that's where, you know, yes, people who hang up there may be a profile of them. People who don't answer, guess what they all have? Caller ID. And, you know, 10 years ago, caller ID was definitely not the typical family. And even nowadays, I mean, I don't know, your parents are probably okay. My parents... getting them to understand, I mean, caller ID was a little rough on them. My 90-something-year-old grandmother, we got her caller ID, it didn't matter. She didn't understand really what it did, you know.
Are they not allowed to hang up the phone like when they're surveying you? So surveys, I pick up the receiver and I put it down for like 3 hours.
No, what you'll hear, I think this, what they do is they're at phone backs. They'll make 5 calls at once. They'll pick up the first person they'll talk to the first person that answers.
Oh, yeah.
That's why when you pick up the phone, say hello once. If you say hello twice, it triggers their response. And I don't know whether it's the headphones or, you know, but I know if you say hello once, you'll hear most time you won't hear anything. If you say hello, hello, hi, Mrs. Cassidy, this is so-and-so, and I'm taking a survey, blah, blah, blah. Sometimes what'll happen is they'll hang up on the other four, but one of them just may not get hung up on, and so you'll still hear people talking in the background. They're allowed, I mean, they'll hang up.
Okay.
I'm sure, especially if you became verbally abusive, they'd hang
up. Also, I don't know if they work, but I know that we have like a zapper thing. It's supposed to
It's supposed to delete your phone number from their databank, I believe, but
yeah,
I don't know.
We haven't really call since we got it, but I don't know if that's just...
Well, you know what? I'll tell you, ProTel, the people who are doing the survey, have called us over and over and over again. And some of these investment firms will try to call my husband over and over, and I'll answer and say, he's not interested. Well, ma'am, I'm sorry, he has to tell me that himself. I think bad words,
just,
and then I hang up on them.
You just, like, put your name on the national...
But certain things are still allowed to call. If they put their name on caller ID, there are ways they can still call. And if they're taking surveys, they're allowed to call. And if they're asking for donations, charitable organizations are still allowed to call. I believe those are some of the breakdowns.
We would Pinkerton get like a lot of college ones.
Yeah, we do.
Like I did that. There's a lot of people who like, I don't know. I feel like it's different from Pinkerton because it's like more like personal, I guess. But
well, I'll tell you, even Lehigh calls me. I don't answer the phone. I'm really tired of hearing from them after all this time.
Some people like love it.
Oh, that's what I want to show you guys. Okay, let me get through this. I have something interesting to show you. I knew I forgot something. Sorry. If a study looks back at data collected in the past, it's called a retrospective study. One of the books I read talked about trying to tie scholastic performance to music study. People who started studying music when you were 6 and 7 years old, did they do better than people who didn't study music? That's called a retrospective study. And why is it not an experiment?
You're not testing anything. You're looking at trends.
You're not making people take music lessons or preventing people from taking music lessons.
Is that different from a longitudinal study?
A longitudinal study. I don't know what a longitudinal study is. I'll look at that, though. Yeah, I mean, anything that's... What'd you say? No, I mean, I told you, this is... I'm open to any of these discussions. A longitudinal study, I've not seen anything written on yet, but what is a longitudinal study?
It's just like a study taken over time.
Oh yeah. Okay. That's an observational study, a longitudinal study. Yes. In an experiment, if you can assign treatment in different ways, it's called levels. So if you're doing something where you're having people take different doses of medication, those are each called levels, and the treatment is all the levels at once. That is, the treatment is taking Tylenol at the first sign of a migraine. The levels are you take 1 extra strength Tylenol, you take 2 extra strength Tylenols, or you take Tylenol for migraine. Those are the different treatment levels in a treatment. And let me see if I can find. I gotta get through this real quick. Okay, I gotta get through this last slide because I want to show you something. I went to just Lehigh to look at what majors require statistics. Oh, you guys are gonna be in good shape taking the statistics course. Okay, last part of it. 4 principles of experimental design. The last thing I want to talk about is control, making conditions as similar as possible throughout the experiment. Randomize, making sure it's random enough so the effects of any unknown or uncontrollable biases are equalized. Pardon? Go ahead.
No, we're talking about how we're going to print it.
Oh, yeah. It's not worth taking them. No, because also it's a matter of if you can remember control, randomize, bias, block, or control, randomize, replicate, block, that's really what you need to know. What? Well, Chris, you are a first semester senior. You're going to college next year. I really hope that your abilities are far more in line with what I think they should be. Replicating the data and blocking. Blocking to randomize to equalize variation across all treatment groups. Imagine you are buying plants to test a fertilizer. And you want to test the fertilizer on plants. And you have 2 different greenhouses providing those plants. By blocking, that is putting the 1 greenhouse in 1 group that's being tested and the other greenhouse plants in another group, or flowers versus vegetables, or, you know, whatever. By blocking the sources of the plants and applying treatments in the same way, the differences in the treatments can be seen. Matching subjects. That is, when you apply a treatment, let's say you got, you know, 15, let's say you got 20 plants. Half are going to get 1 fertilizer, the other half are not going to get fertilizer. Oh, but out of those 20 plants, 12 came from this greenhouse, 8 came from the other greenhouse. So you're going to take the 12 and split them and apply the two treatments and take the other eight and split them, blocking. Another way you can block is by gender. If you're testing a drug on adults over 60, ginkgo globa, what is that called? Ginkgo globa, whatever that is for memory. You might want to separate men and women and test, and so you can see the effects on women, see the effects on men, the control, the no control. When you blocking is just like stratifying when you sample. You're bringing people into their groups and then evaluating them. Okay, let me show you this last slide. I'm so interested. This was something I did on Friday. Okay. So it started off as a conversation. I'm on this bulletin board and statistics teachers, and it started off as a conversation. You know, if we're talking to our kids about taking statistics, what kinds of majors require statistics in their majors? And all of these, obviously, the MBA requires statistics. I know my husband talked about
undergrad too.
These are all undergrad.
MBA.
Yeah, that's the one thing I included for a graduate.
Oh, okay.
Well, you don't usually get an MBA. I mean, an MBA is a graduate degree, not an undergraduate degree.
No, yeah. Yes. Required in some schools for undergrad, about the same.
For undergraduate engineering, public health.
I'm
going to get there. I'm not there yet. This was a list that I got from some people. Architecture, I put a question mark because there are some architecture programs that require statistics, some that are not. Yeah, but MBA, the reason I put that up there was because my husband talked about when he got his MBA, he said what messed people up in statistics was people were freaked out about the math. And he kept saying the math is the easy part of it. You're just using calculators. Relax. Statistics isn't hard. What overwhelms a lot of people is math. You guys will be in good shape with that. So I went to Lehigh. And so what I did was I went through the, I don't know how many pages, the 480-page course selection, and I did a search for statistics. And in just a basic search, and I took about half an hour to do this. Notice I'm only up to the C's. Now, certain chemistry majors, when I was a chemistry major, they didn't have pharmaceutical chemistry as opposed to business chemistry, as opposed to these are sub-concentrations that weren't there. Statistics was not required for a chemistry major now. For almost all of the sub-concentrations, it is. Civil engineering courses have their own statistics course. And then here we go, electrical engineering, environmental studies, finance. All of these seems not so surprising. Journalism.
That makes sense.
That was really cool. And they said journalism and science and environmental writing, these two are in the same major. They require statistics, and I thought that was pretty interesting. And then when I went through psychology, sociology, anthropology, social psychology, and even to these majors is not required, but they strongly suggest for history and IR to take statistics. So, kind of interesting. All right, so for tonight, I'm going to give you out the worksheet. Get this started. It is not due till next Monday. And then we're doing the reading also. No reading. Hold on. I got to go get it.
What is it? What thing? Wait, what is that?
No, since we went yesterday,
I'm going to Central.
Is it now?
Yeah, I'm going.
It is?
Is it the same thing as yesterday?
Yeah,
probably. I have a question, so I'm going to come at the end.
Right here.
Oh,
thank you. Okay.
I don't want to do any of the class. I don't need to do